evening, folks. Welcome to a special edition of the Trinity Thames. Normally, you've got three miserable moany folk. You've got two guests with us tonight, and hopefully it's a bit more upbeat. There's some positive news. So a big welcome to Cormac from Dublin and the Celtic Collective, and Peter from Blantyre, also from the Celtic Collective. So as you can probably guess, we've got five non-happy clappers tonight rather than just the three. So it's been a very eventful week. To just go over a little bit of history, on September the 3rd, an open letter was sent, headed up by the Green Brigade North Curve. It got 120 signatures to it, and very quickly it grew momentum. And it must be said, thank you, Michael Nicholson, for helping to grow the Celtic Collective, because whoever spoke to a friend of Roger Hanna at the Sun gave the formation of the collective a hell of a boost. And then that 1,030-word statement the following night, that just sent Celtic supporters bonkers. So on the back of that, and very, very quickly, the collective was born. It didn't have a name to begin with. I think it was a fortnight later, the name. There was one public meeting, and before they knew it, Celtic suddenly started to want to talk. They wanted to invite fans in to discuss the Fairhurst report. And a couple of weeks later, after one silence, after three fixtures where the collective had taken action, they decided that we better get all these guys in and see what's going on. So without further ado, I'll pass over to Cormac. If you can tell us a little bit about, I don't think much more is needed on the formation of the collective. Most of us, everyone's seen the minutes from last week's meeting. What's been the follow-up? What's been happening among the collective since the minutes were published last week, Cormac?
Yeah, and firstly, Joe, just thanks to the three of you for having us on. We're delighted to be here. The meeting was last Monday, and since then, obviously, there's been different discussions on different podcasts similar to yourselves, and they've been circulated amongst all the 420 plus signatories of that initial open letter. So the substance of the minutes has sort of been filtering through to support and has been met with a lot of, I suppose, surprise, or people are quite taken aback at just how that meeting went down, how there was no real substance to what the club brought at all. So I think people were quite taken aback at that, in as much as, you know, both within the collective and I think across the general support, I don't think people maybe expected a whole lot to come from the meeting. But I think at the same time, I think people are quite surprised at just how empty it was. So since then, within the collective, it's very much looking forward now. The meeting happened and the minutes are out, but it's about looking to the future, looking forward. So we're having the steering group meeting tomorrow night, and then on Thursday night, so this Thursday the 16th in Grace's, there's another of the big meetings where all the signatories are invited to attend. So that's whether attending in person or online. You're all invited to attend on the 16th this Thursday, and we would encourage everyone to do that, because if you're a signatory to that letter, you are a part of the collective in as much as myself or Peter sitting here. So it's a group which is there for everyone to play the part. The way the steering group was formed was of people who were willing to give their time, and the sort of the subgroups that exist off the steering group, then it's all people who have put their hands up to give their time and give their energy and take part. So would just say that to everyone listening tonight, if you're a member of a supporters club or an organization, everybody can play a part here, so don't be shy. But so that's what we're looking, obviously our own strategy will take shape then once we have our meetings. And you know, we'll see what comes from that. I don't want to preempt any discussions in terms of, you know, what strategy or actions might come out in the future. So, but it's very much looking at these next couple of meetings, and we'll take it from there.
Peter, what's the main reaction that you've had back from the publication of the minutes? Most people were utterly shocked. It was pretty well leaked. There's a few guys on podcasts giving the tone of the meeting, but the detail was absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, it was confirmed that with a £10,000 a week chief financial officer, Belgian and German tax laws caught Celtic by surprise. And when the CEOs pushed on who's involved in these transfers, what is a club transfer? He shrugged his shoulders. So I would guess even you guys must have been quite taken aback by the reaction that you've had. What's it been like for you guys inside the collective?
I think it's amazing how these pesky tax laws can just come up and slap you about in the face that eventually, you know. And so I think clarify something, Joe, I originally from Blantyre, now stuck in Edinburgh, and I'm a part of Kerrydale Street. So I'm sort of, so if anybody's on Kerrydale Street, the message board, I'm Pedro K on that, so they might know me through that. So, I don't think it's, I'm telling any secrets here when I tell you that the collective is ourselves are just as stunned and just as, I wouldn't say the word disappointed, because I think we all sort of expected that sort of outcome, but even this outcome surprised us and surprised the folk that went along that night. Did it surprise us? A wee bit, but ultimately it's pretty much what we thought was going to happen. I think the fact that we got an invite was a positive. I think we sort of gave the board credit where the can give them, and the asking fans along, although I would point out the collective weren't originally invited. It went to the normal, the affiliation, the association, Disabled Supporters Association. So that sort of crowd, and to be fair to some of them, they gave up a space that they were entitled to go along with, so the collective could send members along. So that in itself was just a good example of us working together to get something done. So it was, you sort of lost words exactly how much more you can say about this, because I think it's been said over the weekend, certainly online and podcasts like this, probably amongst groups of fans. It was just an absolute debacle from the board. And I think that's the best way of putting it. And I know that we spoke about this. I saw somebody mention that they saw Cormac and I this morning on another podcast. And we'll try and keep consistent messages for what we said this morning. So I hope Cormac remembers everything. But I think one of the things we did say was that I don't know if there's any future in going ahead with any further meetings with the board. I mean, as Cormac mentioned this morning, a meeting has got to have a purpose and hopefully an outcome. And if that's the state of the meetings that we're going to have, then I don't know if that's going to work for any of us.
Yep, 100% agree. If you're getting patronised and told everything's well and you lot are off your rockers, there's no point in it. Unless the board have got some points to make and some concessions and some willingness, it's utterly pointless going along for a repeat of that. But anyone that's been to the AGM would know the format and what happens there. And I think everyone that was at the meeting says it just seems like an extension of the 1,030-word statement on the 6th of September, except I don't think there's any mention of UEFA financial sustainability regulations. They switched to Belgian and German tax excuses, but I'm sure James has got a few questions bubbling away. I'm sure James has got hundreds of questions bubbling away. James, if you can fire one at each, one at Cormac, one at Pedro.
Well, first, Peter, it's good to finally put a name in the face, mate, because we've exchanged a few emails on Kerrydale. And Cormac, thanks for coming on, mate. Just for the point of view of you guys, did you go in there with more optimism than you came out? Because I read, I think it was it Ross from Celtic Underground who said that the general impression that the guys who went in there tried to present was, look, we need something back for you guys to take back to the guys we represent. We need some goodwill that we can take back and say they're serious about this and they want to talk. It must have been disappointing not to get any of that at all.
I don't think anybody went in expecting Michael Nicholson to resign there and then. And I don't think anybody went in looking for him to be resigning there and then or asking for him to resign. So I think there was a general expectation. I think Ross is absolutely right. I think there was a general expectation something, however small, would be offered. Now, and they had lots of wee, small, easy wins to make there in that meeting. And I suppose that demonstrates just where they see fans, that they can't even make the small token gestures. That could have been anything. There wasn't a set agenda. The agenda was basically the seven questions that were set out in the original letter that Joe mentioned at the start of September. That was how the meeting went. So, but the board could have made small token gestures just to show that they were there. They were listening. They were happy to engage. They were happy to work alongside us. And I think it's important to say that certainly for the collective, and I'm sure the wider fan representation that was here, we went in there in a really positive, professional way. There was no. It wasn't going to be a shouting match. It wasn't going to be demands. It wasn't going to be. It was just going to be listen to what they've said, ask some questions, try and get something from them, and then we could report back, and then we can go forward, because this is about trying to make Celtic the best it can be, and how do we do that? And the board have got a role to play there, but they've got to, until you realise there is a problem, you can never set about trying to get that problem sorted. So, and the board just don't accept it as a problem from the fact that we've qualified 19 times out of the last 20 for Europe. Which is, that's where that's their level of ambition and success, then that in itself says a lot.
It certainly does, mate. What about yourself, Biggie? What do you think, Cormac?
Yeah, I mean, the collective, we went there and the organisations, we went there in good faith. As Peter said, there was no agenda, but we went there in good faith to have a meaningful discussion. And I suppose that meaningful discussion wasn't forthcoming. And I think the initial feedback from several of the kind of the collective members that went on podcasts, I think they all referenced almost a feeling of being sad or disappointed because... We don't want this, we don't want to exist in a position of confrontation with the board. We want a board that we can be pleased with, that we want structures in place to give us the club that we believe in, that we can be proud of how it's run, that we look at the people who run our club and we feel proud that they're doing a great job to make Celtic the best club that it can be. And that's the attitude that we carried into that meeting, that we're here to work with you, really. That was the spirit of going into the meeting, and that wasn't really reciprocated. And you can see in the answers that were given, it wasn't the answers either were sort of a stonewalling exercise or just answers that don't really hold up under scrutiny. You know, if you're looking at corporate governance, whether it's the performances in Europe, or the performance of the youth system, or our player recruitment, and they're putting forward a line that they're perfectly happy with how all of that is functioning, it does not hold up to scrutiny. If you pick in any of them, but Peter already referenced the being happy, thinking that the 19 out of 20 qualifications for European competition is that's sign of all being well. Celtic qualifying for 19 out of 20 European competitions, it's kind of like saying well done to your kid when they come home with a bronze medal, and then you realise that all participants that didn't get a gold or a silver medal got a bronze medal. The way we're set up, in Scotland, qualifying for some manner of European competition really isn't something to be patting ourselves on the back about. You look at the five in a row missed opportunities. You look at the length of games we went without scoring a single, without winning a game in the Champions League. The amount of missed opportunities over the last decade and a half of qualifying for the Champions League, it just doesn't stack up. Then looking at the corporate governance, the answers they gave for the success of the youth system, if we're going back as far, when you're going back as far as James Forrest or McGregor or Kieran Tierney, if they're kind of your go-to responses as a sign of success of the youth system, you're quickly running out of date there.
There was one answer that they gave that actually made my jaw drop when they were talking about the fan advisory group, and they said that they were looking at models from various clubs, and the two that they mentioned were Manchester United and West Ham. And I was actually pretty stunned when I read that, because as bad as these people are, they cannot possibly think that they are a model of good relations between fans and boards, because the Man United advisory group detests the board of directors there. And if you've read Michael Gillard's book Legacy about the London Olympics and how it was infiltrated by the Canning Town gangsters, according to that book, West Ham actually brought in the Canning Town heavies to threaten their fan advisory group when they complained about the move to the new stadium. So if they're the models at Celtic are looking at, I think we can do better, a lot better.
I think this is where I think I just shrugged my shoulders now, James, at that sort of, because absolutely. It's, but again, it comes down to that this is the board we're dealing with. You know, I'm sure there are excellent fan engagement models out there that they could have picked. But yeah, as you say, you go to Man United, who's a basket case anyway, and West Ham fans who hate going to that Olympic Stadium and are now pining to go back to, you know, the old Bowling Green. There is a suspicion, I think, and it's held with the folk at that meeting as well, that basically the board just went in there without any homework whatsoever. And it was maybe our last 15 minutes before we go in, what can we say? If we say this, that should please him, because this is the type of folk that we're dealing with here. You know, and I just don't think they took it. They gave us any respect whatsoever. And they invited us to the meeting. They treated us well, but they just gave us no respect that we were there to have a serious discussion with them whatsoever.
Yeah, they had a month to prepare. That open letter went out on the 3rd of September. The meeting was the 6th of October. The discussion about who leaked to the Sun, Nicholson's final dismissal was, we're busy enough as it is. what is it these guys do?
Well, see, that's the question, Joe, I would like to ask. And if anybody's ever read anything I've written, Kerrydale Street, it's a question I've asked a few times when you look at the way they go about site. What do people do in a day-to-day basis at Celtic Park or wherever that is that they're based? What do they actually do? You know, when they can't get Stephen Welsh sold because they can't answer a phone or whatever it is, what is it they're actually doing? What does Nicholson do on a day-to-day basis? What's his job description? What about Mackay? What about the rest of them? What is it they're there to achieve at Celtic? Because whatever it is, by any metric, I don't think they're meeting that.
Yeah, there's heads of departments everywhere. There's executive this, executive that, executive the next thing. So they've got very little to do. Theirs is just direction. But we've held them quiet for now. Eric, throw in a few questions. Pop a few in the way.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the things that struck me when I read the notes was when Michael Nicholson was addressing you guys, he said that, you know, we're not where we should be. We understand we're not where we should be. And I suppose the question that I would have expected to be put back to him, but we're not where we should be because of where you have put us. So what are you actually planning to do about that? And I think that reflects the whole attitude throughout the whole meeting, in that there was no self-accountability whatsoever. And I know you guys said earlier on that engaging with these guys in meetings is probably a pointless exercise going forward. But if there was to be another meeting, do you feel that, I mean, I suppose you guys went in there this time around and you wanted to give them the opportunity to speak and to answer the questions, and obviously they didn't do that, okay? So I suppose the question I'm putting to you is, the next time around, if it does happen, if they do agree to another meeting, do you feel we should be going in a bit harder on these guys and actually putting them under pressure? Because the seven questions didn't put them under pressure because they didn't seem willing to answer them. So if there is another meeting to be had, would you feel that putting them, you know, pushing it back at them, hitting them a bit harder, I think, would it be worthwhile?
Well, I think another meeting needs to be based on something. That's the key. That's the key thing. That's the key message we would need to be feeding back to them at this point, is we're not going to drag people over from Ireland or drag people from different parts of Scotland or Glasgow, giving up a Monday night just to go in and be fed with a load of word soup and kind of window dressing, which is what they did last week. So before another meeting is even agreed to, there'd need to be some substance behind it. I suppose that's the key thing. So probably more than saying, right, we're going to go in and we're going to give it to them harder this time, because they'll still just respond with the same sort of
obfuscation.
Sort of vagaries and we'll think about that, we'll get back to you. There's a lot of that. We'll get back to you on that, and that just goes on and on. The you know, getting kicked to touch. One of the steering group members that was on, can't remember which, I think it was the Homeboys podcast on Friday night, and they were just commenting about having been at the fans forum, and an issue came up, and the same issue came up last Monday, and the same response was, we'll think about that, and we'll have a look at that and get back to you, and they're still waiting to hear back. So it's that constant kicking down the road. Yeah. And so any future meeting would have to be actually about something rather than just people going in.
I think it was important that we had that meeting with them, you know, just to hear them out, to hear what they've got to say, and to give them a chance to have a discussion with us, with the wider, you know, the groups and the collective. So I think that was an important thing that we did, to go attend that meeting. So I don't have any issues about going along and being there. But yeah, as Cormac says, any meeting needs to have something to discuss and something that we can actually get involved in, because just for another meeting for another meeting's sake is just wasting everybody's time.
Absolutely. And I think one of the key things that I took out of the meeting, and again, you guys touched on this earlier on in terms of the 19 qualifications, or that was his answer, Michael Nicholson's answer, in terms of what we've done in Europe. And again, he didn't seem, for the guy who is the CEO of our club, he didn't seem to accept any responsibility for the fact that if we're only qualifying for the Europa League, a club of our status has to be aiming for the Champions League, and we have to be aiming for the finance of the Champions League. We're having that or less in terms of, you know, if we qualify for the Europa League. And it just smacked of, we're not taking any accountability. And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that there's no strategy. That comment reflects the fact that there's no strategy. Oh, look, we're happy. I mean, if he's basically saying we're happy if we qualify for the Conference League, as long as we're in Europe, and after Christmas is a bonus.
I think what they'll say is there is a strategy, you know, but how you get the outcomes to that strategy is the problem, you know, and that's where there's something wrong. So I think they would argue, and I'm sure they've shown a strategy at some point. I think somebody put up a picture because one of the interesting things was that there was nobody for the football side at the meeting. Now, some folk will think whether that, you know, that was relevant or no, and that's fine. But it'd have been interesting for somebody on the football side to be there. But then somebody put up a Tisdale had done something at one of the fans' forums, and it was an 11 bullet point piece of work that I think was a strategy. So there is a strategy. It's just how they're implementing that strategy is the issue. I mean, at the very least, I would hope there's some sort of strategy, even if it's just a top line. Because
there doesn't seem to be KPIs.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, and this is what I was talking about earlier on, what is the metrics they measure themselves against? Because there doesn't seem to be anything there, or certainly nothing that they make public. And there's maybe a good reason for that.
Yeah. If they put a strategy, if they put goals, then that things can be held accountable to. So Lowell said many things. One of them was that every penny that comes into the club gets spent again. That's clearly history. And it was either we should be playing in the Champions League. It was either 3 seasons or 4 seasons out of 5. And that's hit or miss in that. Unless we get presented with a direct entry into the Champions League, it's very problematic. So they don't want to set those targets because then they'll be held up against them. But one of the things that's obvious of interest is at some stage there's going to be folk pushing for a boycott, and that's miles and miles and miles into the distance. I can remember 1994, and there was no season ticket culture at that time, and Celts for Change were very reluctant to call for a boycott, and I don't expect you guys to do it, but so far you had the late entry into Rugby Park, you had the visual display at Firhill, and the silence in the match against Hibs. I think the board did us a favour by arranging the meeting before the Braga match, because I don't think there was too much appetite for continued silence against Braga and Motherwell. But what are your ideas? I mean, the obvious one is a merchandise boycott. I think that's already underway with a lot of people. That seems the most obvious one. And nobody can point the finger at you saying, oh, you're harming the team. It doesn't matter to the team whether folk are buying the latest Adidas kit or not. So is there options on the table? And the interesting thing is the public meeting's on Thursday, and Thursday morning Adidas are going to launch the latest cash grab. It's going to get the most horrific backlash. Whoever it is, the Adidas Celtic account manager, is in for the fright of their life. So is there other options? What cards have you got to play? Because the boycott is miles and miles down the line.
Yeah, I suppose don't want to give a tricky or slippery answer, but don't want to preempt discussions too much. As I mentioned, we have our own. We have the steering group there tomorrow night meeting, and then there's the wider meeting on Thursday. All options remain on the table. I suppose that's the best I can put it to you. Everything is on the table, and if people out there have any suggestions, do forward them on. We're very open to suggestions and ideas. I suppose I don't want to preempt discussion that will happen tomorrow night and on Thursday. But ideas like the boycott, everything's been there. There's ideas being tossed around and. I suppose having the tyres kicked at the moment, so that's probably about as much as I want to go. Not to preempt the discussion tomorrow night and on Thursday.
I mean, other than the steering group, as you probably know, there are a number of subgroups set up. So there's a communication subgroup, there's a governance subgroup, there's a match day protest subgroup. So certainly there's pieces of work going on around about that. The AGM will be coming up in about a month's time. You know, that could be a focus that we wish to look at as well. And I would certainly say, Joe, I don't know if boycott's as far away as you're maybe thinking it would be. Thursday, that sees the latest collections launch, to add to the dozen other collections launch that seems to have come out in every 2 weeks. So, I mean, we're in the run-up to Christmas as well, which is a time that I'm sure that the sponsors like Adidas and all that look forward to, because they know that there's a lot of money will be spent over in the lead up to Christmas. So, as Cormac says, I don't want to preempt anything. And personally, talking about it myself, I think a boycott would be a very strong message. It would be financially a big message to send to the board. But nothing's off the table. And I would maybe include silences in that, although maybe they're sort of underneath the table a wee bit. They're not sitting at the top of the table anyway at this moment.
Can I just put a question to you guys? Sorry, Cormac, just a quick one. I think after the meeting, one thing that's become very clear is that this is going to be a long process. It's not going to be something that's going to happen over a short period of time, or the change that we want enforced at the club, or, you know, what we want out of this is not going to happen. And do you guys feel that the board now see the organization that the collective is putting together as a threat, and their reaction, obviously they're in power at the club and they want to retain that power. They have, you know, pretty much retained it for the best part of 20 years. And do you feel that, like, part of the, their approach to this is because they now feel threatened? That, I suppose my concern would be, are they going to fight dirty going forward? And is this something that, you know, the collective is prepared for? Because I think these guys are really going to dig their heels in. Maybe fight dirty is not the correct terminology, but maybe they're really, really going to dig their heels in and make this very, very hard for us. And is this something, like, are you guys looking at it as a long-term strategy? Because I did say last week on the podcast that one of the biggest things that we need to take out of the meeting on Monday night is not to be disheartened by it, yeah, and to walk out of it and not feel disheartened, and that we have to form a coherent strategy. But is the strategy that you guys are looking at, are you under the impression that it's going to be long-term?
I think certainly since the start of this, it's always been seen as a long-term thing, Eric, and certainly that's how we plan and plan it. It's a long term issue, it's no short term. But to be honest, and there will be times where it's getting difficult and you can't see the end of that road, and that's where guys like yourselves and members of your supporters clubs and social media and podcasts come in, and, you know, there to say that, but this is how we can, you know, we can do this. Sometimes when you see yourself fighting against a big organisation, I don't want it to sound as if, you know, we're the wee guy here, because ultimately we are the club. You know, the hundreds of thousands, the millions of fans around the world. And Cormac and I were on a podcast this morning that we were talking to guys from Malaysia and Vietnam and Wrexham, funnily enough. And so we're the club, you know, it's and as long as we have got your guys at the back of us, then I think this is something. I hate using words fight and battles and all this, because there's enough of that in the world that, you know, but this is a campaign that we can actually focus on and win. But it won't be easy, and it's not going to be a short-term thing, and it is going to be long-term, but it's going to take us all to do it. You know, you know, supporters, clubs, individual fans, and individual fans is quite an interesting one as well, you know, and what role does somebody who's not a member of a supporters club or follows a podcast or anything, what sort of role can they play? And they've got as big a role as any of us, because they're the bulk of what we are, the supporter base. So to answer your question, yeah, I think we've always accepted it's going to be a long-term issue there, Eric. Yeah.
And I think the word collective is important. We are all in this together, and the three of you as signatories to that original open letter, you're members of the collective as well. So we are all in this together, and it is going to be a long haul, and we're going to have disagreements, and not every, you know, using the silences as an example, or a merchandise boycott, or whatever tactic or protest you might see, none of us are going to agree with everything all at a time. So it's just being willing that if the broad consensus is going for one thing that one of us doesn't really like, but that we stick together, we have each other's back on it, and it is going to be a long haul. They've got reasons to stay where they are. Michael Nicholson has over 800,000 reasons, stay where he is, and you know that they're not going to be going anywhere quickly. So yeah, it is going to be a long haul, and it's just getting our heads around that when stuff doesn't happen overnight, that you don't get disheartened that.
And certainly I think that one of the tactics for the board would quite easily and happily play is the divide and rule, you know, where they will put groups of fans up against each other, and that's going to happen as well. And I think as long as we're all big enough and we're wise enough and we're old enough to accept that that's going to happen, and we don't fall for it, then I think, you know, that should keep us in a steady course here. So
yeah. Well, I did an article this evening on it, and what I did was I tried to, because we all look at it from the perspective of fans. So I did quite an extensive article in my on my blog this evening where I tried to look at it through the board's from the board's perspective and their reasoning behind the way the behavior. And I suppose one of the key messages I was trying to get across is like, these guys have been there so long, they've become very comfortable in their positions. Mm-hmm. They like what those positions afford them. So I suppose we need to probably understand that they're not going to make it easy for us because they are comfortable in their positions. But I think the problem is that they've become too comfortable and they've lost sight of what they're actually there for.
Yeah.
You know, it's become about them rather than the club. And I think that's become more apparent to everybody in the fan base. And that's why we're here now at this juncture.
And I think it's maybe become a bit of an echo chamber for them, Eric. And I think maybe that's why they're not seeing some of what we're saying. Why maybe some of it is that they're just trying to palm us off. But some of their answers, worryingly, some of their answers, it's what they genuinely believe, which is nearly even more worrying if that's what they genuinely believe and the answers that they gave. But there is that bit of an echo chamber. And I suppose that brings us on to the corporate governance piece, why that's so important. Because when you have non-executive directors that have been there for over 20 years or approaching 20 years, that's just nowhere near acceptable. Nowhere near acceptable. What is it? So if a term of a non-executive director is 3 years and then maybe you do a second one, and ideally after you've done the third one, that's your... By gold standard or by best practice, that should be you out the door then, as a rotation. The fact that we have people there in with the bricks nearly, as you'd say, for over 20 years, approaching 20 years, that's nowhere near good enough. But it breeds this echo chamber. It creates this echo chamber where it's all just a bit too cozy, and then the fans end up getting viewed with contempt because we're the threat to that arrangement. So I suppose that your question does bring in that corporate governance side of things, and that's fundamental to all of this. That's why it's not just in as much as certain people do need to go, and using that example of people who've been there for over 20 years or approaching 20 years, they need to go, but simply changing the names is not going to bring about the change that we're looking for to make Celtic the club that it could and should be and that we deserve it to be. It's not just about changing the names, it's about the fundamental, the governance of the club and the strategies, the approaches that are taken. That's the key. They're the key fundamental that need to change.
One of the issues that hasn't been brought up is financing, and I presume that's somewhere on the agenda for the steering group and Thursday's meeting, because there's folk that are happy to put some money towards it. I mean, if they're spending less on Adidas gear, they might have some spare money, and I don't think it'd be any problem. And equally, if you were to start bringing out collective merchandise, that'd be a seller. So I'm sure those areas have been looked at. But on the attitude of the club, I mean, let's not beat about the bush. They're all there under Peter Lowell. Peter Lowell appointed Nicholson and Mackay came to Celtic, and Peter Lowell's the CEO. And we all know, 18 months. Eric thinks he was just working from home for those 18 months before he reappeared.
I have it on good authority he was.
Yeah, we know that instance. But while he's around and he's got his placemen, they're going to be very defensive. They're never going to change in. They're never going to willfully give anything up. So it's a tough battle, and there's no obvious areas. But one thing I would say is the perception when the open letter was released was, this is the Green Brigade. It's noisy wee guys with politics, but I suspect neither you guys are in the Green Brigade, and the other voices that we've heard on podcasts, they've all been fairly mature. They said it beforehand. The people I've heard on Axon, on Four Tims in a Podcast, and the RTC podcast, they've been absolutely fantastic. The messaging, you don't need minders, you don't need memos and bullet points. Say this, say that, say the next thing. You're all independent guys, but You've all got similar attitudes, and it's not as if you're slipping up. I mean, reading through those minutes, it was like watching a politician getting questioned on television. It was utterly pointless. You could anticipate their answers, and it's deflect and pivot, and yes, we'll look into that, all those sort of things. So, James, we haven't heard from you for a few minutes. What's your take on future direction? You're somebody that attends matches. I still don't think there's much of an appetite for folk not to attend matches. But what other areas of action do you feel are open to supporters without harming the team?
Well, I mean, I love campaigns and I love studying campaigns. So when these guys say that there's a lot that we can do short of going straight to the wire, they are not wrong. It just requires a bit of imagination and a bit of thought, but it also requires that they keep it under the hats until the wider fan base needs to know about it. I also appreciate the idea that we can't take anything off the table, and we shouldn't take anything off the table, because we may be a lot closer to boycotts than people think. And I think we need to define what a successful boycott would look like at this point. We need to think about that. We're never going to get everybody. Even in the days of the old Sack the Board campaign, we didn't get everybody. There were a lot of people who still went to games and would have continued to go to games for years. And no harm to those people. They've got one version of what doing it for the club means, and some years have got another version, which is about protecting the club's longer-term interests rather than just thinking about individual games or how it might affect an individual season or whatever. But a successful boycott in the modern age, I don't even think you need to get 30% of the fans for it to look bad and for the numbers to start adding up to serious money, which would put these people under a lot of pressure. So I think the definition of what a serious and dangerous boycott for the board would be doesn't necessarily have to involve an empty Celtic Park. And there's a lot of stuff in between where we are right now and that stage of it. And as I said to you guys a few weeks ago, it will take a calamity. It will take something momentous for us to get to the point where fans are actually being asked to do that. I think it will anyway. And there would have to be several different opportunities for the board to properly engage and to refuse to engage or to basically waste everybody's time before we got there. And I have to think that there are people on the board who genuinely do love the club enough that they will wise up before we get there. Because as I've said to you guys before, these are not bad people. I don't hate these people. I don't understand them. I don't recognise they have an image of themselves which does not correspond to reality. And I don't understand how they can think that their ideas and their version of what our club should look like is still relevant 20 years after some of them joined the board in the first place. I mean, they boast about following a plan for the last 20 years. Well, there's a problem straight away. You're following the same plan for 20 years. They've defended the idea that group stage participation is in itself a win and we shouldn't be terribly bothered which tournament it's in or whether or not we progress once we get there. The Nicholson shrug of the shoulders is complete insult to every single person and the support, and makes you seriously question the process by which he was appointed. I thought that his dismissive answer about the board having better things to do than investigate a strategic leak from inside the boardroom against the manager has placed Celtic in potential jeopardy, because Rodgers could have the following day simply walked out of the club, claimed constructive dismissal and sued Celtic, and then we'd have looked about as bad as it's possible to look to prospective bosses in the future. And for Nicholson to have done that and to have actually said that in a public forum, I think brings Nicholson himself very close to commit the definition of gross misconduct. And I think in a board where there was accountability, he would have been in real trouble for having said that. Because there's Rodgers' prima facie case if Rodgers does decide to walk. I don't think that these are bad people, but they are hopelessly out of their depth trying to deal with a football club in the modern context. Football has moved on spectacularly far since some of these guys started on the Celtic board, and they have not kept us current at all. We are now talking about adopting a analytics model, which is basically following the Moneyball principle, which is a book that's, I think it's 30 years old, and the ideas in it are even older than that, and this is their version of modernization. They don't know how to get us there. That's the problem I have with them. It's not that they're bad people, it's that they don't know how to get us there. They ran out of ideas, which will happen if you're involved in a corporate culture for 20 years. The whole culture stagnates and the whole thing starts to rot from the inside. And although this is going to take time, I hope it doesn't take as much time as some people are suggesting, because we really need to have something different before we go into next summer. Otherwise, where we are right now is going to look like a happy place this time next year. But it's just that things have to escalate. But we have to bring people along slowly, and we have to make sure that we carry enough of the fans that anything that they do is successful. I mean, I said to you guys last week that the whole purpose of the silence is to ask people to do something right now that is really, really, really small and relatively insignificant. And if enough people get involved in stuff like that and enough people get involved in protests like that, we might not have to be in a position where we ask people to do something much more dramatic in a month or 2 months or 3 months. And hopefully that is the case. As I say, I think there are people with some sanity on our board of directors who will see the writing on the wall and will realise that things have to change. It's how much they change and how fast they change. But way back, months ago, even before the collective was established, we devoted virtually an entire podcast to talk about the renewal of Celtic and why renewal was such an important thing for the club, with some of these people having been there so long. And we really have to start updating the club and dragging it into the modern football world. And part of that process will inevitably involve people leaving. It's just the way it is. It's just the way renewal works. You can't have renewal with the same people sitting in the same jobs. It's not going to work. So there is an inevitability about people leaving. There is an inevitability about this whole process. But we're going to have to carry people slowly and get them there one step at a time. But I think before we get anything drastic, it will take something calamitous to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, James, in looking at the way the board operate. I mean, when you're signing policies above a certain ceiling that you're then emailing members of the board to get sign off to sign a player, the fact that it's email is bad, you know, that they're having to do it separately is bad enough, but the fact that they're still emailing people, you look at Celtic TV and how that works or doesn't work in the vast majority of times. There was that phrase I keep on forgetting about Celtic. They're an Android club in a digital age or something like that, you know, where, you know, it's just, you know, it's just an absolutely joke. But can I go back to something you mentioned earlier, Joe, about the Green Brigade and the ultra scene? I think it's been a conscious decision from the collective that this isn't seen as a Green Brigade or a boys campaign. The Green Brigade and the boys are involved, and they play an absolutely vital part in this. And I think we're grateful for the input that they bring and some of the experience and infrastructure they bring as well. But, you know, we've always tried to make it that this is a much wider than the ultras. And that's, you know, and it is guys like Cormac and myself and a lot of the other faces that you've seen in the last few days appearing in podcasts and voices you've heard. So that's a very deliberate thing that we don't want folk to think that this is an ultra campaign, or it's just the Green Brigade, just, you know, as you say, just making a noise again. It's far too big and it's far too important to be seen as that.
Do you think, guys, just one quick question, Joe, it won't take long. Everybody's saying that we should withdraw, you know, financial support, or we should, you know, hold our money back. Are you guys worried at all if that happens that the board will just hit back with austerity?
Well, they've got 70 million sitting in the bank, so we've got to believe this. So we don't know. I mean, folk, one of the things we've always said as well is that this is going to be a lot of individual decisions, and we've got to respect people's decisions. You know, if there's a boycott of merchandise and folks still want to buy merchandise, we've got to respect that decision. You know, we would hope that we're all in it together and that we're all working together for the same thing. But as Cormac said earlier, it'll be hard to get everybody to buy into the same thing. So I don't see how much mere austerity the board can do, Eric, than what they've already shown us. You know, when you're bidding £1.5 million for a £6 million rated player at Go Ahead Eagles, I think when you've got a stadium that doesn't have hot water, when you've got a stadium that, when you're holding Champions League or European press conferences in a big marquee outside the front stand, you know, I think the board have already given us austerity for the past 20 odd years. So
that's a very fair point.
I don't have any fear about that, because that's already where we are.
Well, should we say then they're going to adopt a scorched earth policy?
That might not be as far away. Yes, aye.
And there will, in any protest action, there is some discomfort that goes with that. I think that's something that's maybe helpful for people to get their head around as well. That there is challenges that come with each protest action or each type of each line of attack. So it's just to take that on board as well. Using boycott as an example of merchandise, if that was something that was looked at, I suppose we would hope that people would row in with that. It is down to personal choice, but we would hope that your personal choice would be to support it. And that's up to us to articulate. It's up to us and the podcasts that are aligned with us, and news and fan media, and even through people, supporters clubs, supporters buses, and the various organisations representing thousands upon thousands of Celtic supporters. That's where the onus is on us to articulate why a particular position, whether that, whatever type of position that is, or action. But just using the merchandise boycott as an example, if that was ever to come to pass, it's up to us to articulate why that's the right thing to do, and then stand behind that.
Just want to ask a couple of personal questions. A quick note for any lurkers that were hoping they were going to speak about Steven Gerrard, we'll leave that to next week. So, sorry, you can switch off and go elsewhere. We're not going to discuss Steven Gerrard. But
is that Joe who we talked about? Who's he?
He walked away, and we'll leave it at that. But to you two guys, us three, we've been growing our blogs and websites for a number of years. We've been three various degrees of anger and frustration bloggers and over the time. What's a little bit of background in both of you guys? I guess you were frustrated, possibly internet bampots, 2-3 months ago, but how have you reacted to finding that you're not alone, and that there is definitely a great pool of talent out there in the Celtic collective? How have you reacted personally to finding out that there's a number of people that share your views?
Yeah, it's been great coming together. I've been a member of the Celtic Trust for several years as well, so I suppose discontent with the board is probably a drum that's not a new thing for me to be banging. But it's great. Like, in one way, in as much as we don't want to be in this situation, it's great to see the Celtic support pulling together. And I saw it coming up a couple of times in the comments there earlier on, that it was put to the collective and the people present at the meeting that they didn't speak for all Celtic fans. But we speak for a very, very big number of Celtic fans. The Celtic Supporters Association is in there, the affiliation, the Irish Association, the Disabled Association, several organisations, and the Supporters Club, numbering up to 420 plus signatories, as I said earlier. So there's thousands upon thousands of Celtic supporters being represented. It's the most unified I've ever seen the Celtic support since the mid-90s. So it's great to see that. Very sad that it's, you know, that it has to be, as we said earlier. We don't want to be. This isn't something that we're kind of craving. But it's actually been, it's good to see. It's good to see a unified Celtic support coming together.
It's very positive, because hopefully there's a positive conclusion to this. And I suspect the Celtic Collective, if the changes you were looking for all happen tomorrow, I don't think the Celtic Collective would dissolve. You've got loads of talent, loads of ideas and ways of driving things forward. So it's not a single issue. You're going to be around for a while. But Pedro, as you've been hammering the keyboard on Kerrydale Street, going through various levels of anger and dismay, How's it felt for you realizing that there's a real life community offline that have got the same ideas? And I think at various times folk have been said, oh, we could really do with a Celts for Change movement. We could really do with a new Matt McGlone. But it's never quite happened until now. How's it been for you realizing that there's life away from Kerrydale Street of similar thinking?
Is there life away from Kerrydale Street at all, Joe? I mean, I don't know. It's when you've been on the front line of Kerrydale Street for as long as I have, you sort of come across all types of thinking and thoughts over the years. So, but yeah, I mean, as Cormac said, this is something that's brought us all together. You know, I think social media has a lot of minuses, but a lot of pluses is it brings a lot of like-minded folk together. And I think, the difference between now and 30 years ago and Celts for Change, where ultimately, if you weren't in the Shelston Town Hall, that's where all the action was. Whereas here, whether you're in Malaysia or whether you're sitting in Glasgow or Edinburgh or Dublin, wherever you happen to be, you're in the front line of this now. You're an active participant in what's going on. And certainly through Kerrydale Street, if anybody's listening to us, it's a member of Kerrydale Street, you can get in touch with me personally. You know, you know where I am, you know my name, you know. So if you've got thoughts or any suggestions that you would like to take forward to the steering group, then just drop me a message in that and we can do that. I'm sure Cormac's got the guys in the supporters club that are doing the same with him. And this is the case with all the 400-odd organisations that countersigned that letter. You know, we're all in this together. We've all got something to play. We've all got a part to play in this. And we've all got a contribution to make. And it's not a short-term thing. It's a long-term thing. And I think and hope we're here for the, you know, until Celtics, as long as Celtics here, we'll be here. As a great man once said, they're there and they're always there, and God bless everyone else.
Great words from Cormac and from Pedro, but I'll finish up with our top wordsmith. James, don't stop looking away. You are our top wordsmith. You can delve into all sorts of politics, history, you name it, but what are you looking for from the Celtic Collective and the Celtic support, which is largely that nonsense that you don't speak for the full Celtic support? At no stage has the Celtic Collective ever suggested to speak. No one will ever speak for the whole Celtic support, but you managed to get 420 signatories in the course of basically a fortnight. And again, thanks to Roger Hanna's pal on the Celtic board and the wordsmith that put together that statement. But James, how would you round things up and what would you like to see going forward?
In terms of no representing the full support, you never get complete agreement on even on an issue this big. I mean, we all know that there's a couple of, let's be honest, one prominent Celtic fan site where you can go if you want to, like, experience full-scale denial of reality. And they guys are never going to be on board with anything that we'll try to do here. But the really important context, and I'm going to use a West Wing moment here. It's one of Jed Bartlett's great quotes. He said, "Decisions are made by those who show up." And I think that is what it's all about. The collective is open for anybody who wants to get involved. We might not speak for every supporter, right? But we've shown up. We've made ourselves, we put ourselves out there. There's a lot of people, by the way, who are going to get a lot of grief for putting themselves front and centre of a campaign like this. And what amazed me going into that first meeting that night was that if you'd have said to somebody, even a week before it, that you would have the... And I'll use the kind of disparaging terms that they would use, right? You get the armchair revolutionaries, the student politicians, the fucking mainstream media wannabes, the internet bampots, the self-important heads up their own ass bloggers, and all is in the same room, all working together for the common good of renewing and reforming the club. I would not have believed it was possible. And I walked in there that night and there they all were. It was amazing. And what's amazing is that although there are some big personalities involved in this, and there are people who are obviously more visible than other people, they people were visible before this and they'll be visible again after it. But there's nobody being, you know, Mr. Billy Big Time. Nobody's putting themselves forward as the next Matt McGowan, as you say, the great leader or anything like that. There's no egos involved in this. Everybody is doing their own bit and they're content to do their own bit. And, you know, I volunteered for the steering group, didn't get on it. I'm working on the comms group, which is excellent. And everybody feels the same way. It doesn't matter whether you volunteered for one group and ended up in another group, or volunteered for this and ended up doing that. Everybody is content just to do their bit. And that's really inspiring. And it convinces me that this thing is built to last. And one of the things that I hear that the meeting on Thursday's going to discuss is how we move forward to building a permanent structure. And I don't think there's any more important a job to do in the short term than that. Because once we put this once we build a permanent structure for this thing, then that is the fan advisory board. And we've done it without the club being involved. And I think if we're going to do it, and we're going to do it credibly and do it right, then it needs to be done without the club being involved. We can't wait for Michael Nicholson to sign off on the ultimate form of this. I would rather he didn't. I would rather the board didn't sign off on it, especially if the West Ham and the Manchester United versions are the ones he has in mind. But I think if we can get some kind of general agreement on Thursday about what that would look like and how it would work, I think the job's half done. Because once that body is formed and once that organisation exists, which will bring together as much of the support as possible, and everybody who wants to be there and wants to play a role in shaping the club's future and the future of the support and how the support engages with the club, them in business, them have really got something. Because the next time there's a meeting between the board and the fans, the people who go to that meeting will represent the largest mass membership movement of our support that has ever existed. And they'll own the table. They'll run the whole show.
Well, I'll wrap up. Pass over quickly. Cormac, Pedro, have you got any message to send out there? And then I'll wrap up this story.
Following on from James, no pressure. No, it's just be involved. You know, it's here for everyone. So don't feel you're on the outside looking in. Be involved. Pass ideas on. Everything's welcome.
Yep. I mean, this is our club, and it's a club we'll leave to the generations that come behind us. So let's make it the best club it can be. Doesn't necessarily need to be world class and everything or anything, just the best it could be. And I have no doubt that we, all of us together, could do that.
Well, if the guys are setting a benchmark of world class, they're failing miserably at that anyway.
Absolutely.
I'll settle for Club Bruges class, but we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much to our two guests. We'll be back again. You'll just have three of us next week, next Monday at 6:30, but I'm sure there'll be guests coming in from the collective from time to time. So I wish everyone involved in Tuesday and Thursday's meetings all the very best, and you can be assured of the full backing and support of us three guys and the goals of the collective. So thanks again, guys. Well done.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
See you later. Have a good week.